Psalm 33.
Start at 8.
Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the people of the world revere him. For he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded, and it stood firm. The Lord foils the plans of the nations. He thwarts the purposes of the peoples. But the plans of the Lord stand firm forever, the purposes of his heart through all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he chose for his inheritance. From heaven the Lord looks down and sees all mankind. From his dwelling place he watches all who live on earth. He who forms the hearts of all, who considers everything they do. No king is saved by the size of his army. No warrior escapes by his great strength. A horse is a vain hope for deliverance. Despite all its great strength, it cannot save. But the eyes of the Lord are on those who fear him, on those whose hope is in his unfailing love, to deliver them from death and keep them alive in famine. We wait in hope for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. In him our hearts rejoice, for we trust in his holy name. May your unfailing love rest upon us, O Lord, even as we put our hope in you. Amen.
Thank you. And now we turn to John chapter 15, verse 12. Jenny's going to read it to us.
John 15, verse 12 to 17. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command. Love each other. Amen.
In August, we were reminded that it was the 50th anniversary of the Woodstock Pop and Rock Festival. Some of us thought, where have all the years gone? It seems like only yesterday. But that's the trouble, we're getting a bit elderly. Everything seems like only yesterday. It was the zenith, there's a whole peace and love thing that you may remember from those far off days. And it was billed, in fact, as 3 days of peace and love. Unfortunately, it didn't quite turn out that way. Nowadays, if you organise a pop festival, you're required to have one loo per 30 people. The organisers of Woodstock had one loo per 800 people. It also rained, so the whole place became one vast open sewer. The other thing that the organisers had forgotten was to provide food and water. So by day three of Woodstock, some people were suffering serious dehydration and hunger. So the US Army had to be drafted in with helicopters to drop supplies on the festival goers. Now, one of the people who was watching this on television with growing horror was Joni Mitchell, who was going to be the star attraction on the third evening. But by the third morning, she was getting serious cold feet about the whole thing and called off her visit. So she never went. But that didn't stop her writing a very popular song called Woodstock, as if she had been. And you may remember the song, don't you remember? Yeah, you do, of course you do. And it contained the line, we are stardust, we are golden, let us get back to the garden. Tell me what that means. I'm not sure. I think the garden may be the Garden of Eden. Anyway, Sarah and I were totally oblivious to the whole Woodstock thing at the time, because we were 2 or 3 months in to a long overland journey from here to India. And now in those days, if you went to places like Eastern Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Khyber Pass, Pakistan, all those kind of places, there were very, very few white people. So being white was somewhat exotic and wonderful. Well, not wonderful, but it was exotic. And so, you very rarely came across white people, but those that you did come across were almost invariably Vietnam War draft dodgers. Now, the Vietnam War was at its height at this time, and they were drafting in by compulsion lots of, young American males. And one of the ways of avoiding the draft was to flee the country. So you found all over the place, and especially in areas of Asia where it was possible to live very cheaply, these Vietnam War draft dodgers who were escaping from being called up. Now, one motivation was fear. The Vietnam War was a very bloody war. About 30,000 American servicemen were killed. Another 70,000 were maimed for life. Do you remember that Kenny Rogers song, Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town? That was about a man maimed for life in the Vietnam War. And then about 700,000 were seriously injured. They got over their injuries, but at the time it was pretty grim. So it was a very terrible war for the American servicemen, as of course for the Vietnamese themselves. So that was one reason, fear. Others claimed ideology. They believed in the peace and love thing. They saw the Vietnam War as the antithesis of peace and love, and therefore they were protesting by avoiding the draft. And some of them even claimed to be patriotic. They would even use the word, I am a patriot, or patriot in American, as explaining why they were dodging the draft. And of course, they made sacrifices. Many of them actually died. The draft dodgers. They died from malnutrition, from tropical diseases that they couldn't afford to get cured, from selling too much of their blood to local hospitals to make money to feed themselves. All those reasons, as I say, many draft dodgers sort of died in these remote places. And all of them, all that we met, were desperately homesick. They were longing to get back home, but feared the draft. Now, the whole Brexity thing, and that's the only time I'm going to mention it, has made all of us think a lot about patriotism. What does it mean to be a patriot Englishman or a patriotic British person? After all, isn't patriotism perhaps not such a good thing? Is it not the first cousin to colonialism, jingoism, nationalism, and lots of other isms that we're supposed not to like? So maybe patriotism isn't a good thing. And lurking behind any thoughts about patriotism is, of course, the Norman Tebbit cricket test. And if you remember what that is, it's that if you live in Britain, you have an obligation to be a patriotic British person, and the test of that is whether, if say you're born in Pakistan, you should now support the English Test cricket team. That was the test. So patriotism was supporting England at cricket. So wondering about all those, what to make of it all? Well, when one is foxed, it's always a good idea to look at the Bible. And wonder what Jesus would have said or does say about patriotism. Actually, he doesn't say very much, but he does a lot. We know from the Gospels that Jesus was a devout Jew. He went to all the festivals, observed them, and he knew the Jewish scriptures, our Old Testament, back to front. So when he was criticizing his people, he would quote the scriptures at them. So if you remember when he upturned the tables of the money changers, he quoted the prophet Jeremiah, as the reason for his doing it. The scriptures were part of what Jesus was all about as a human being, and he knew them backwards. But he never spoke about patriotism. He never said you should be patriotic. He just assumed it, that he assumed that his Jewish listeners would be patriotic Jews, and when he came across Romans, like the Roman centurion, he would have assumed they were patriotic Romans. In other words, patriotism is not something you choose, it chooses you. Now, I am passionately patriotic British, or possibly English, I'm not quite sure. I love my country. I genuinely think I would be willing to die for my country if called upon to do so. I'm passionate about my country, as I'm sure all of you are. But there's no moment when I decided to be patriotic. It just is. One is part of being human is to love one's country. So Jesus never had to teach patriotism, he simply assumed it. Now, one of the many things I love about my country is you're allowed to be patriotic in different ways. Remarkably, as long ago as 1757, when the Seven Years' War was raging against the French, we were always fighting the French in those days, Parliament acknowledged the validity of being a conscientious objector. As long ago as that, So Quakers were exempt from military service. And of course, that became even more important in the First World War, when lots and lots of people claimed to be conscientious objectors, and there were courts to decide whether they were genuine or not. And actually, even if you were a conscientious objector, it didn't mean you got out of the fighting. Many of them were drafted in as stretcher bearers at the front. So when there was a lull in the fighting, they would rush over into the no man's land and pick up the wounded and bring them back. And in fact, the casualty rates amongst the stretcher bearers, the conscientious objectors, was even higher than that among the combatants. So it wasn't an easy option, but nonetheless, our wonderful country recognised the validity of being a conscientious objector. You could be patriotic in different ways. And that leads us to the person, when wondering about patriotism, that one always comes back to, Nurse Edith Cavell. If you remember, she was a nurse in German-occupied Belgium in the First World War, and famous for treating the Germans, German patients, with the same love as she treated the British. That was great. She also enabled, secretly, British servicemen to escape back to England. And for that, she was arrested by the German authorities and sentenced to death. And on the night before she was due to be shot, she made those famous words, "Patriotism is not enough." Those words inscribed on the plinth of her statue just off Trafalgar Square. "Patriotism is not enough." And to complete the quotation, "I must feel no bitterness or hatred towards anyone." Now that is an expression not just of patriotism, but of something more than that, of Christian patriotism, because I genuinely believe we as Christians are called to be patriotic in a slightly greater way than all other people. We're called to have a patriotism that embraces the patriotism even of our enemies, to regard the German soldiers in their patriotism as equally valid to the patriotism that we have. They're our enemies, but their patriotism is as valid as ours. Now let me tell you two little stories that illustrate that. One is of a man called Marmaduke Hussey, who was fought in I think he got an MC in the Second World War. He was in the Italian campaign, sort of marching up through Rome and so on, and he won an MC for something, I can't remember what, but then he had his right leg blown off. So he was sent back to England to have an artificial leg fitted. And the artificial legs in those days were pretty crude, not very satisfactory at all. Nonetheless, he had it. Now, after the war, he went into the family business. And in the course of the family business, he met a German who owned and ran a factory that made various engineering-type things, because the Germans are great at that, including artificial limbs. And this German that he met said, "Can I give you a new leg? After all, we shot you off for your first leg. The least we can do is give you another one." Now, Marmaduke Hussey was a bit confused at this offer of generosity, but nonetheless, he eventually decided to accept it. So he went over to Germany and was fitted with this sort of grade A artificial leg. Wonderful. And he came back to this country, and he was so touched by this generosity that he started a charity in Britain. And it was to raise money for German combatants, people who had been soldiers in Germany, who had lost legs because of our fighting. We'd shot their legs off, just as they'd shot our legs off. So he started this charity to raise money for young German people, former combatants, who needed new legs. And he had a wonderful way of raising money. As he went into business, he'd be very successful, and he'd have meetings in his office, or he'd go to meetings. Whenever he went to a meeting, he would always unstrap his leg and pop it there. And of course, people would look at this leg and be amused, what's this leg doing? And that would enable him to explain about the charity, that it was he'd been given the leg by the Germans and he was giving back. So there was this genuine patriotism of the Christian kind he was talking about. And of course, once he'd explained that, all the people there had no choice but to give money to this charity. So he made a fortune, and it was a very successful charity. That's one story, and that seems to me a story of true Christian and German Christian patriotism. Now the story I often speak about my paternal granny, and I've often mentioned that my uncle, her second son, was killed in Calais in May 1940. In fact, we've just been on holiday, we watched The Darkest Hour. Have you ever seen that film? It's absolutely wonderful. It's about Churchill and through up until the Dunkirk evacuation. And it mentions something in that I hadn't actually realised. that Churchill deliberately... We had a garrison, we had a troops in Calais, and the evacuation was a bit further down the coast at Dunkirk. And Churchill deliberately sacrificed the infantrymen in Calais in order to divert fire from the evacuees at Dunkirk. And so eventually we were so beleaguered, including my uncle, that they had to give the order of every man for himself, and my uncle was killed. Now, Granny never ceased to mourn Uncle Adrian. Every day of her life, she thought about him, longed to be with him in heaven. And that's how she would talk about him. I long to be with Adrian in heaven. And this is the point, she was a devout Christian, and she hated the Germans that killed him. But she knew she shouldn't. And she prayed day after day, night after night, to have that hatred taken away from her. I don't know whether it ever did go entirely, but certainly she prayed that it should. She understood the nature of Christian patriotism, to which we are all called, to love the peoples of other nations for their patriotism, for their love of their country, as much as we love our country. That is Christian patriotism over and above just the ordinary patriotism that we all have.